This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps is a familiar American ideal, but can too much self-reliance be a bad thing? We'll talk to an author who says it's gone too far and that we need to do a better job of accepting help from others. Now, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services says we started this year with more than 1.6 million Wisconsinites enrolled in Badger Care Plus or other Medicaid programs. Congress passed a law that prevented states from dropping people from their Medicaid rolls in March of 2020 because of the pandemic. Starting in April, Badger Care Plus recipients will once again be reevaluated and asked to reapply for health care coverage. But renewal dates for recipients are going to be different for everybody and spread out over the next year or so. Our next guest says there's no reason for Badger Care Plus recipients to panic, but they should be prepared. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a Badger Care Plus recipient yourself? What questions do you have about the re-enrollment process and about health coverage availability here in Wisconsin? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bobby Peterson is the executive director and public interest attorney for Advocacy and Benefits Counseling for Health, also known as ABC for Health. Bobby, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Let's first of all make sure we know what we're talking about here. What is Badger Care Plus and who relies on it?
Well, it's a healthcare coverage program that provides important medical care and services for about over a million people in Wisconsin. There's other variations of Medicaid that are going to be impacted as well. So other folks out there might be impacted with that have Medicaid coverage or Badger Care Plus. So it's a pretty big change, and it's important. I think it's important to maintain continuity of healthcare coverage. And there's opportunities to make transitions to other coverage and services. So it's a opportunity to review your coverage and to get updated and hopefully maintain the services that you need.
Now, if somebody out there is on Badger Care Plus and hearing the news, maybe right now for the first time, what should they be doing right now?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, keep an eye on your mail. If you have an account through access.wisconsin.gov, that's a platform where you can log in and see what it's an opportunity to look at your benefits and coverage. There's information about what your renewal date is going to be. You'll also be getting that in the mail, so making sure your mailing address is up to date. Contact your local consortium that is coordinating the services and your application. Make sure your mail address is up to date. People have moved a lot over the last couple of years, so keep that up to date. It's one of the most important things to do. And as you said, too, this is going to happen over the course of a year. So not everyone is going to be changing. Nobody should lose coverage on April 1st. And that's just the date that the process begins. The term that the state has used and across the country, people call it the unwinding. Little weird, but it's meant to convey the sense that this isn't going to happen all at once. It's going to happen over the course of a year. People are going to have an opportunity to get their new information to the county and also possibly transition to other coverage programs.
We are talking to Bobby Peterson from ABC for Health about a change for Badger Care Plus. After a few year hiatus, people will need to reapply over the course of the next year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Bobby, for people who might be eligible for Badger Care Plus but aren't on it, what do they need to know? What should they be looking at to see if they might be eligible for coverage?
Well, it's an important coverage program for a lot of folks. Kids are the easiest for us to get coverage for. So if you have kids out there that are uninsured, Badger Care Plus is a great program that might be able to provide some help. Pregnant women, there's expanded eligibility. We want to make sure that all pregnant women get good access to health care and coverage. And then also for single childless adults that are low income, it's an opportunity for healthcare coverage as well. So it's really an important program that allows you to get in to see a doctor, get some important work done, evaluating how you're doing both your physical and mental health, and get the services that you need. You also might find that you're eligible for marketplace coverage. That's the healthcare marketplace, or Obamacare, as some people call it, but it's there's opportunities there as well. So if you're not eligible for BadgerCare Plus, you may be eligible for a marketplace plan. If your BadgerCare Plus is ending, or there's other activity that might result in a special enrollment period.
What goes into the process of applying or reapplying for BadgerCare Plus?
Well, it's a fairly decent application that you need to complete, but you're going to need to make sure you have your contact information, income information, information about your family and family size, household size, so that's the information that will be collected by the county consortium. You'll be evaluated for eligibility, and the determination will be made. But sometimes mistakes are made in the process, and people have an opportunity to appeal denials, get some help. I think one of the things that we want to really convey to folks out there is that maybe this isn't affecting you yourself, but you may have a family member, a family friend, a neighbor might need a little extra help during this transition. We don't want people to panic about it, because it's going to take over the course of a year, but about, 55 to 65,000 people each month will be subject to renewal beginning at the end of May. So it's a lot of folks, and, the whole system out there is a little rusty right now. So people haven't done renewals in a long time, and even the workforce, they haven't done a lot of renewals. So everyone's going to have to, get back to where they were 3 years ago, because this process it's been suspended, really, for 3 years during the public health emergency. And there were good reasons that we did that. I mean, we don't want people during the pandemic to not have healthcare coverage. So the federal government gave Wisconsin extra funding to say, just keep people enrolled, because it's too important that they maintain coverage right now. So, but that's 3 years is a long time, and now the process is ending, and people have to jump through a few hoops to maintain their coverage.
I want to talk some about outreach on this. As you mentioned, one of the ways people would be notified is by mail. A lot of people move, they have moved over the last 2 years. This might be low-income people who may have housing insecurity. They may have moved a lot. Are there going to be efforts to reach out to them apart from, a mail that might go to two addresses ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're working with, some healthcare providers, or working with a lot of folks out there to hopefully track down people and make sure they know what's going on. And this is why, as I said, it's important for all of us to be thinking about those folks that we know that might need a little extra help, people that maybe in transition, maybe have moved a couple times, maybe off the grid a little bit. And so reaching out to help those folks, doing some outreach. There's been a lot of work done across the state. We have regional enrollment networks that were set up that are actively working and doing outreach and education, trying to make sure that we find all the folks over the course of this next year to keep them covered, because there's the possibility in this change that people will just lose coverage. And even people that lose coverage initially may be able to get reconnected. It might be a paperwork snafu, could be just, things that we can fix. So even don't assume you're going to be denied. Go through the process, get some help. And if you are denied, it may be worth just trying to review it and work with an advocate to try and review it and get some help to see if you really are still eligible. Or you can transition to a marketplace plan, which could be really quite affordable as well.
And you mentioned getting some help. For people out there who, for one reason or another, might have difficulty going through this application process, on a practical level, who should they reach out to? Who can they reach out to for help?
Well, we're recommending people go to the wiscovered.com website. It's a partnership between the state of Wisconsin, covering Wisconsin, and advocates to try and provide sort of a one-stop shopping place for information about some opportunities within Badger Care Plus and Medicaid, but also Marketplace. So there's phone numbers, there's contact information. The website has a lot of information to help direct you to resources. People will also be getting, you know, if they get their mail, they'll be getting contacted through the mail about the process and renewal. And remember, it's not necessarily a complete reapplication. It's updating their information, but a renewal is, you know, may not be as difficult as a complete reapplication for some people. There's a small group of people that were manually recertified over the course of the public health emergency that will need to file a new application. But that's a smaller subset of the larger, you know, 1.6 million people.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. That's kind of off subject, but what's the latest numbers on what an expansion of Medicaid under the ACA would do for coverage for families and children? And, you know, what would it save money for the state overall? And I'll take my answer up here.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. A long-running political debate here in Wisconsin, Bobby. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer type thing. We should have done it, you know, 10 years ago. The state left money on the table. And it would have made this process a little simpler for some people. It helps to streamline eligibility. Right now for Badger Care Plus, we have parents sometimes in different coverage than the kids. We create an eligibility, you know, corn maze to try and work through to try and figure out what coverage you have. So not only would the state identify more people for coverage and get them coverage, it would bring in federal dollars. It would streamline the system. It's something that most other states have done. All of our neighboring states all have done it. And a lot of very pretty conservative states have also done it. Wisconsin has dug their heels in. And without providing a good rationale or reason for it. It's long overdue. And I think, you know, people should speak up about it because it's just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's resources, it's revenue, and it's a simpler system to use.
Talking to Bobby Peterson, Executive Director at the public interest group ABC for Health. We're talking about the return of the Badger Care Plus renewal process, what enrollees need to know to maintain their health care coverage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use or have you in the past used Badger Care Plus? What is this exemption over the last few years from having to reapply? What has that meant for you when it comes to keeping that coverage going? What questions do you have about what happens now, what you need to know? Do you have a local provider who offers help with these applications? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Bobby Peterson with ABC for Health, looking at the return of the Badger Care Plus enrollment and re-enrollment process that was put on hold back at the beginning of the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you work in healthcare or healthcare advocacy, love to know what you are seeing in your part of the state. If you use or have used Badger Care Plus, could you talk about the enrollment process? Could you offer advice maybe for others? Or do you have questions for our guest about what this all means? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bobby, we heard from Mike in Wauwatosa who couldn't stay on the line. He said he had tried to call into Badger Care and didn't feel like he was getting answers from the Badger Care system. I'm not sure exactly what office he was trying to call into. What might people find if they try to call in? Where would they call in if they wanted to talk to someone who administers Badger Care?
Well, they certainly call the consortium if they know their information, and they'll be asked some questions about their, you know, the program and if they're a current member But they also should be, you know, making sure that they get their mail. They can also log into access.gov.wisconsin for, you know, the platform. There's also an app that they can download from the Google or the Apple Store if they want to put it on their phone, which they can check their benefits and coverage. They can get their renewal date online. But there's should be opportunities to get through the system. And if he's having trouble, he should go to wiscovered.com, and there's some phone numbers there that he can call for some advocates to get some help from. But you know, this is I think it's important for people to know too that this is an issue that's, you know, of course it's affecting people on BadgerCare Plus, which includes, you know, a lot of folks, but it's also covers some kids with disabilities on Katie Beckett Medicaid. There's programs for people with disabilities called the Medicaid Purchase Plan that this is going to affect them too, and foster care Medicaid. So there's a lot of changes out there. So people that are receiving services through Medicaid need to have their antenna up to make sure that they're paying attention to these changes. There's also people that have aged over the process, or 3 years, you know, people have become eligible for Medicare, which is a different program, not affected by the unwinding, but there are some opportunities for them to make sure that they can transition then into Medicare a little more seamlessly. You know, none of this stuff is easy, but it's all doable. We just have to take our time and work through it, help people through the process, understand, you know, where they are now and where they're going, how old they are, and what coverage they might be eligible for. So it's a painful process to go through for so many people. But I think the goal is to try and keep people covered and hopefully get more people covered. This is one of the outcomes of the public health emergency is that we had one of those lowest rates of uninsurance we've ever had. And that's a good thing. More people with coverage is really better for all of us to maintain healthy people as much as we can, a healthy workforce, people that are going to be able to get the care when they need it.
Thanks for sharing that experience, Mike, at 800-642-1234. I should mention a couple of the websites Bobby has mentioned, wiscovered.com and access.wisconsin.gov. We have those linked at this website, wpr.org/centraltime. We've got links to both of those. One thing I've been reading, Bobby, is, you know, if people are on BadgerCare Plus now and they're hearing this news, they should not rush to reapply right at this moment. They should wait till they get that notification. Do I have that right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, they need to wait. They may not be up for renewal for, you know, it could be into 2024. I mean, it depends a little bit about when they applied and what their normal renewal date would be. But it's, you know, don't jump the gun, you know. I mean, that's why it's important to be vigilant, but not to panic. I mean, we can do a lot of things to help you maintain your coverage. And if your income has gone up over the time period, you may even be eligible for extension for BadgerCare Plus, because there's some rules that if you would lose eligibility because of an increase in income. We want to promote people that can, you know, work their way up the ladder. There's an opportunity to maintain your coverage for BadgerCare Plus too. So it's important to both be patient and diligent, and then look for some help.
Are there bureaucratic hurdles or barriers that, Bobby, you think we might be able to streamline here with the current system?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, it's a major bureaucracy. And as I said before, I think that one of the key things we could do to help streamline it is Medicaid expansion. It's troubling that we separate parents' coverage from their children's coverage sometimes because of income issues. Children have a higher income threshold for BadgerCare Plus. So sometimes parents need to go to the marketplace while their kids are on BadgerCare Plus. And it's more difficult because it's just continuity of coverage. And we know, we learned this way back in the last century, that having parents and kids on the same coverage is better for everyone. There's also, you know, the process is more difficult. There's opportunities now, I think, in Wisconsin where we're going to have continuous eligibility for kids once they, you know, if their eligibility for BadgerCare Plus is ending. There's new federal rules beginning in 2024. That the state has to provide continuous coverage for the kids for another 12 months, which is good because this is all part of the transition. And sometimes we lose people in the transition from one program to the other. And that's why we're so concerned right now about the public health emergency ending and the unwinding and making certain that people get the coverage that they need and they land in the right spot.
Let's bring on another caller. Ella is with us in Burlington. Ella, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about?
My employer does not offer insurance, and I cannot afford insurance through the marketplace, I believe it's called. And I was wondering, what is the difference between regular Badger Care and Badger Care Plus? Because all I really need, really bottom line, is I need help to pay for the insulin that I need.
Ella, thanks for the call. We just have a minute or so left. Bobby, do you have thoughts for Ella?
Well, the good news is that the price of insulin is finally coming down, so that expense is low. It's challenging right now without knowing what Ella's income is. She might qualify for some marketplace coverage that could be more affordable. They've increased the subsidies for it, the advanced premium tax credits. So that would be an area really to look into the marketplace to make sure she's not eligible for one of those plans. Doesn't sound like she's going to be eligible for Badger Care Plus, but we just without knowing what her income is, her family size, there's just some key information we need to know.
Ella, thanks a lot for that call. Just in our last half a minute, Bobby, remind us, people on Badger Care Plus, what should be on their minds right now?
Well, I think it affects a lot of folks, but it affects, your family members, your friends. Keep an eye in the mail. Reach out to those folks, your loved ones, your neighbors, people that you're in the faith community with. Make sure that they're reading their mail, checking their mail. They know what the dates are. They know the information they need to get back to the consortium for the renewals. This is a real good opportunity to do a little bit of a health benefits tune-up for family members to make sure you're in the right program at the right time. If we all work together, I think we can make sure that we get through this more smoothly and fewer people will be losing coverage because it's so important to maintain that coverage.
Bobby, thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome.
Bobby Peterson is executive director and a public interest attorney at ABC for Health. He joined us to explain the return of the Badger Care Plus re-enrollment process here in Wisconsin. We've got a couple links at WPR.org/Central Time for information and assistance. Pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, rags to riches, the self-made man. They're common phrases in American history. They're usually used in a positive way, virtues that help us find success. But our next guest says too much self-reliance has its downsides and that these ideas are at a toxic level in American society. In her new book, she makes the case that they limit our economy, our politics, our day-to-day lives. She calls for a more helpful future where we can be comfortable depending more on one another and in some cases the government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the principle of self-reliance has gone too far, or do you like that this is a big part of the American ideal? If you have lived in the U.S. and elsewhere, how do you compare and contrast our ideas of self-reliance in the United States versus other places you might have lived? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Alyssa Quart is a journalist, poet, and author of books including Squeezed and Republic of Outsiders. She's executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. She collaborated with WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge on a three-part series called Going for Broke. Her latest book is called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. She'll be at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison on April 11th. Alyssa, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You've written a lot in the past about money, work, and how tough it can be to afford life in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. What led you now to tackle the idea of self-reliance?
Well, I've been running this organization, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which I created with the late, great Barbara Ehrenreich, for 10 years, which means I've gotten 10 years worth of letters and comments from people saying, why are the people that you write about and the people who write for us, because some of our writers are working poor, why are they struggling so much? Why don't they own their house? Why do they own their house? Why don't they have a college education? Why do they have a college education? Kind of fault finding people for their own economic instability and poverty. Why do they have kids out of wedlock or, without a husband? You know, why do they have kids with different men? You know, and there's a lot of blame and kind of moral finger pointing that I saw. And I wanted to know where that all came from.
You dug into this history. And one of the things you found is this idea of pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps that made it into the title of your book was actually originally kind of an absurd statement, a mocking statement. Some of the first examples is, interestingly, in newspapers here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about the origin of that phrase?
Yeah, there was a farmer named Nimrod Murphy who newspaper article was mocking him for that he wasn't going to be able to get over the Cumberland River or a barnyard fence. And they used the straps of his boot as a joke. And then later in the Racine Advocate, they said, you know, the governor must be trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And again, it was mocking somebody like, what a joke. Like you can't chew gum and walk at the same time or whatever. It was that kind of phrase. But over the decades, it became this reality. People were like, okay, I got to really do this. You know, people are taught in school now that they're supposed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Somebody came up to me at an event and told me that he'd been taught that in school. So we've come a long way since it was a joke in Racine.
Then there's the frontier idea where, you know, people went out and homesteaded and settled and lived tough lives, which they did. The tough life part is pretty true, I think. But as you point out, they did it in one of the largest federal government giveaway programs ever. Could you talk about that that paradox of our frontier mythmaking?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what inspired this was I was reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie and, you know, Plum Creek and all these other, which of course, you know, she was actually born in rural Wisconsin. So it's perfect. I'm talking to you about this in 1867. But her books were all extolling, you know, her ma and pa, we remember them, you know, Michael Landon in the 1980s TV show, 70s and 80s, doing it all by themselves, you know, planting their crops. As it turned out, when you look into this, first of all, Pa was a terrible farmer and he needed the help of his neighbors to, you know, feed his family. But second of all, they got money from the federal government through the Homestead Act of 1862. So this family got a parcel of land for free, and it was one of the biggest land giveaways in our country's history. And one of the pioneer mythologies, right, is we did it on our own. We arrived by this in this covered wagon. We chopped our own wood. We built our own house. That's true, but they also got the land for free. This is not happening now.
I'm going to skip over a bunch of history and look at the present day and the stories we tell about ourselves. And you say whether we're talking about politicians or a lot of people who might look self-made on the face of it, parts of the story, parts of the biography get left out. Could you talk about our, I guess, modern day myth making?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's somebody right now who's about to be indicted, Donald Trump, who would constantly say he was a self-made man and that his father was a Horatio Alger story. But it, obviously, I mean, he was raised with millions of dollars. He'd been given a $1 million loan, right, to start a business. And, you know, he was in a huge amount of debt also, and he kept borrowing money. So he was dependent on his creditors as well. And obviously, every single person who worked for the Trump organization, and at this point, these, you know, millions of voters who follow him, and Elon Musk similarly is sort of extols doing things by himself. You know, now he owns our big social media platform, Twitter. But you know, he also got money for his research and development from the federal government, and he also came from wealth. And so I just felt it was important to keep saying, not that there's something shameful about coming from wealth, but these people were born on second or third base. And so this assumption that we're all supposed to be able to be a tycoon or a titan or run for president or, you know, just survive easily is a lie.
Talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in with your thoughts, experiences, or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Rob? Good to hear you.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about, Paul?
So in my early 20s, I was a floundering, panicky, angsty young man trying to sell stereos and TVs in a store and just trying to make my way. And you know, in our system, afraid of sort of just poverty, I guess. And I moved to Denmark, and I lived there for 16 years. And in my time there, the first thing they did when I landed was gave me a national health card. So I had free health care. And then I received a stipend until I got on my feet, which took me about a good 6 months to start being self-sufficient. And they would even supplement via aid if I needed it. My kid right now is going to college. It's paid for. Taxes are enormously high there, in our view. So if you're rich in America and you look at their tax base, you would say, this is crazy. However, when you think about how it's distributed, they don't have the angsty, panicky young people like I was. I'm extremely grateful for a social democracy, not a socialism, but social democracy.
Paul, thanks for sharing your experience. Alyssa, what do you think of his compare and contrast story there?
I love that. I mean, one thing that I found, I looked at volunteerism, you know, where people lend a helping hand, right? That's something that is always being extolled in this country and is supposed to replace the kind of social safety net the caller just mentioned. But in countries with the highest volunteerism rates, Denmark, as he said, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, they also have the strongest government-supported safety net. It's not a zero-sum game. You'll still be helping your fellow man, and you'll still be, you know, creating mutual care systems in your social environment if you had a better social safety net. And also, I mean, if you look at the OECD numbers of industrialized nations, the U.S. has one of gives the least part of their GDP to daycare, to daycare or childcare for their citizens. And that's just another thing that there's no real reason why. And there's this idea that somehow people won't be taking care of themselves or being good citizens if they don't have a social safety net.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to David now in New Richmond. David, hi.
Hi. Say, I would 100% agree there's nothing wrong with the social safety net. But I would have to disagree kind of with the premise here. You know, my grandparents came from Germany and had nothing. And my grandfather apprenticed at the railroad and worked his butt off, became a shop manager. And my father apprenticed, became an expert in the rail industry, working at railroads, which were union based. But here's something that my grandmother said when my father ended up going with another railroad that went bankrupt, and he went out on his own as a businessman. And I was complaining that he was gone a lot. And this is what my grandmother said to me. There are people who let things happen, and there are people who make things happen. Which one are you going to be? Whether it's a job that you're trying to get better at or the business that he's trying to make, you have to make a decision in your life. What kind of person are you? Are you going to let things happen, or are you going to make things happen? That stuck with me the rest of my life.
David, thanks for the call. Alyssa, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to have mastery over a domain. It was one of a study someone had done, and it's been proven over and over again that kind of hard work and effort and exertion is really how we become good at something. So the caller's right. It does take hard work, but it's not hard work alone. And that's just the point of this book, that it's gone into overdrive. I mean, yes, my grandparents were immigrants. They came from Poland, Hungary, Russia, and they didn't speak English when they arrived, and they became American citizens and, you know, sent me to college and money working in a shoe store. So I'm with the caller. I understand they work 6 hours, 6 days a week. But at the same time, right now it's this kind of rise and grind mindset. Like if you go on TikTok or social media, you'll see you can, they say things like 9 to 5 is for the weak, or, you know, you have to have lots of side hustles. And it's a really frightening version of this hard work ideology that we live with, you know, that is not, it's not really supportable, because one of the things of the messaging is that you have to do lots of different things, which is not what your grandparents did or what my grandparents did, because that kind of dissipates your energy. But they're saying you got to, you know, work as a physical therapist and a personal trainer, and then you have to sell CBD, and then part of a multi-level marketing scheme. It's the variety and the the number of things that gigs that we're supposed to be working and the lack of, yeah, unionization for the work that we do have.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her latest book. It's called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about self-reliance, how we talk about it, think about it, practice it here in the United States? Do you have ways in your family, your neighborhood, your group of friends where you depend on each other, rely on each other? Do you feel bad when you have to reach out for help, whether it's to a friend or family member or to a government program? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Alyssa, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk sort of about the emotional side of our attitudes toward help. I'll share a very, story from my own household. I've been married a long time. When I'm sick, my wife takes care of me. When she's sick, I take care of her. Invariably, the sick one getting taken care of apologizes again and again. I'm sorry. I'm such a pain. I'm such a bother, blah, blah, blah. And the other one's like, shut up. That's what we're here for. Why do we feel so ashamed, maybe, or apologetic in those moments where we might need help, even though we know we're going to offer it the next time around?
That's so funny, because I think this is what the difference between the Midwest and like a strong elbow New or sharp elbow New Yorkers. Because yeah, when I'm sick, I'm like, get me the orange juice. There's no apology. What I'm trying to develop in myself, and I want others to find in themselves, I call it the art of dependence, not just interdependence, dependence. And it's really hard to learn how to either take care of someone else or be taken care of without apologizing, and to see it as an art and a craft and a skill, like something that we should be proud of. Like, usually we're ashamed of any dependence that we have, and independence is what we value. When kids, climb on the monkey bars, we say, good, you're doing it by yourself. But, the parts of children that are dependent and the parts of adults that are dependent are of value too. And so that's part of what I'm trying to do in this book. It's also I call it radical self-help. It's like to have more acceptance for ourselves when we are at our most vulnerable and needy, so we can also accept others when they're vulnerable and needy.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Heather is with us in Brookfield. Heather, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Heather?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic because it brings me to a specific time in my life when I had just had twins. And it was interesting. I was in another state, and their state, my husband was a student and going through a master's program and working. And so we were on Medicaid, but under Medicaid, they did not even let me see an OB-GYN. They just had me see family medicine residents. The whole time I was pregnant with twins, and I didn't even see an actual OB-GYN until I had complications after the operation. And I remember standing in my apartment, and I had complications. I didn't understand them. I couldn't do the things that I used to be able to do. And my parents were there to help me, who came from a rugged line of pioneers. And my dad went to Harvard. They were hard workers and instilled that hardworking aspect in me, which I lived my whole life. But up until that point, I suddenly couldn't do the things I used to be able to do. And my dad said, Heather, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I knew that I couldn't. Like, that was not possible.
Heather, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Alyssa, we can be self-reliant until sometimes we can't.
Yeah, I just found that very moving, Heather, because that was part of when I recognized dependence, both my daughter's dependence on me and my dependence on others. When I was pregnant, I was at hyperemesis the whole time. I don't know if anyone has had that, but you're sick the whole time. It's what Kate Middleton had. And you become very dependent on people, something you're not used to when you're, youngish. I was in my 30s, a woman. So the Medicaid story is heartbreaking that you didn't get adequate care. But I also think I'm glad that you had a voice inside yourself that said, I can't do this alone. I need more than this. And that's part of it. I mean, we can try to find the resources, try to develop them both politically, economically, and in our neighborhoods, you know, within doing it ourselves. But we also have to have that voice inside ourselves saying it's okay to need it. So thank you for sharing that.
Heather, thanks a lot for calling in, talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa, you conclude your book offering some advice. There's going to be a lot of policy debates about what state and federal government might do, but you also offer suggestions about how people can build communities where people help each other. Can you share some of the practical advice you give in the book?
Yeah, so I went on a journey, really. It was during the pandemic, and I went on a journey to find alternative American dreams. And I did find them. I found them in the ways that people were organizing businesses, something called worker co-ops, where the workers own their own labor. They own their companies or the nonprofits that they work for. And I interviewed many people who belong to those. I talked to people who were part of mutual aids. I'm sure in Madison and other parts of Wisconsin, you guys had that, but during the pandemic, where people delivered food to their ailing neighbors, and it was reciprocal. It's not a charity. You may give food one day or pharmaceuticals one day, and the next day you receive it. Other forms like participatory budgeting, where citizens help decide city budgets and they sit in on meetings. Again, it's a voluntary thing. And also kind of therapy that was interesting, because right now we have a epidemic of anxiety and depression. And this was kind of mutual care therapy that was peer-to-peer therapy, where people would talk about their economic struggles, sort of like what Heather just did, as part of the therapy. And I found that very beautiful. I came up with a name for it, inequality therapy. But these are just a few of the fixes that I found, new American dreams that I found.
Do you have thoughts for us to do kind of, I don't know, maybe a self-reliance gut check and inventory to see, hey, yeah, these are ways I can be totally self-reliant, and that's cool. These are ways where maybe I should let some help into my life.
Yeah, that's sort of what I've been trying to do when I've been talking to people about this. And I mean, one thing that I've done is to try to find the sources of my own strength or happiness or achievement. Think about who was behind them and sort of attribute. That's become my mantra. Rather than gratitude, I think about attribution. So, you know, the people I work with at the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, my mom, my grandparents, you know, my daughter. Yeah, just all the people like you, the people that I worked with in Wisconsin, you know, that really shaped me, changed my life, teachers I've had. And that's just, it's been nice to think about creative output or work output as a collective thing rather than just done by oneself. It makes it more meaningful, really.
Alyssa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Alyssa Court, journalist and executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. She's going to be at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison. That's coming up on April 11th, talking with WPR's own Shannon Henry Kleiber. You can also hear the work she did with, to the best of our knowledge, on the three-part series Going for Broke. We've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. Plus, if you need information about changes in Badger Care Plus, we've got a couple links up there alongside that one.